I will, we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And there were two bills that have been removed from the agenda because the Department of Human Services said they could not implement them at this time. So I'll be talking to Department of Human Services to see if we can get them to change their mind. And then we could give those bills a hearing somewhat later. The first bill is House File 2379, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is that House File 2379 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill, correct? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, members, thank you for hearing House File 2379. This is a bill for an appropriation from the Chemical Dependency Fund, Treatment Fund, for the recovery schools, which are schools where, can just bring another chair as well, come on up, schools where students can go when they are chemically dependent and be able to complete their education while receiving the very important support that they need to be able to do that and be in a milieu around other students who can understand where they've been and help them recover while completing their education. And there have been some struggles with the funding because right now they're completely funded through education, as I understand it. And as we know, they also have to provide treatment services. So it's kind of a combined situation. So I have here a couple testifiers to talk more about what this is about. And I know that the Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund is a very limited resource, Mr. Chair. We all understand that. It goes for a lot of things. I think there's kind of a very large issue before the legislature this year about, you know, what kind of services we need. How are we going to prevent and treat and fund the treatment of addictions? This is something we've been struggling with in a lot of different contexts. But I thought that this was something that was very important for us to also listen to, learn a little bit about, and figure out as part of the mix of how we're going to move forward and helping these young people who are struggling with chemical dependency. So I'm going to ask my testifiers.
Would you move the bill?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move that House File 2379 be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill.
Testifiers, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Derschlag. I'm the director of Pease Academy, which is the oldest recovery high school in the country. We've been operating since February of 1989. We look at recovery high schools as an important part of adolescent ongoing wraparound services once they get out of treatment. Unfortunately, going back to the public schools or other alternative high schools, for many of our young people who are in recovery, is not very successful. And so that's why recovery high schools kind of started when they did. We do look at this as a public health issue, as also as an educational issue, and I believe that's why we are here today. I know that right now we have a full-time chemical dependency counselor that what we fund directly out of our educational dollars, and she has, for our school, has a caseload of between 70 and 75 students who she meets with regularly. So we also know, being part of the Association of Recovery Schools, that the states that recovery high schools are being most successful in, and we're seeing growth in and are being able to provide these services, are those states that recognize it both as an educational issue as a public health issue, and they're able to tap into both. Since 2009, we've lost a total of 9 recovery high schools across the state. We have 4 still in existence. Unfortunately, last year we saw one of the oldest recovery high schools and probably the best known national recovery high school, Sobriety High, had to close its door because it just could not meet the needs of the students that they had. We saw another recovery high school close as well. So today, the state of Minnesota only has 140 seats for young people in recovery.
Okay. Questions? Representative Norton.
Thank you, and it does sound like you provide a very valuable service to young people who need this opportunity. And I'm trying to understand, it seems to me there's a lot of need out there, and it disturbs me to find out that these programs are closing. And I don't want to get into anything that might be uncomfortable or not within your knowledge base, but can you tell me what you mean when you say the schools are closing because they're not meeting needs? Is it because they need more finances? They don't have appropriate services, or could you be a little more detailed?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can. One,
personal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's my first time. I'll do better if I come again. One of the things I need, I believe that recovery high schools need to be small in nature. I think there's a real benefit when recovery schools are small, because it provides a sense of belonging, a sense of community, which is really missing out of some of, which is missing in the students in their active recovery. And when you're trying to provide a full educational experience with a small school, it becomes difficult. Plus, we always have to maintain that the integrity that we are truly a recovery high school. And that means that our populations kind of ebb and flow, that sometimes it's not the appropriate place at the appropriate time for a student. They might need to get additional services before they return to us. Beyond that, I believe that because of the services that we feel compelled to provide, such as the licensed alcohol and drug counselor, and much-needed services, it stretches those dollars even thinner, and it just makes it a little more difficult for, I think, schools to survive.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. So what you're serving to do here is with the four remaining high schools, you're going to add funding for chemical dependency, specifically for chemical dependency counselors or support staff in this bill?
That is correct.
And you believe, Mr. Chair, Mr. Dershowitz, is that right? We learned slowly, too, over time. We're not alone. That this will be enough to enhance and maintain the four schools that are currently there. You think this is necessary to keep those going in a responsible manner?
Mr. Dershowitz.
I believe so, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to also, we have a student with us today who'd also like to address the committee, and was nice enough to come and down and share his experience. So just
give him a welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Ian McGregor, and I'm an addict. I came to school at Peace Academy 2 years ago, and I can honestly say it is the difference between me being alive today to speak to you and me having overdosed and lying in a cheap plot in the ground. Peace really did save my life. I am accepted to a college. I got a 32 on my most recent ACT, and I'm coming up on a year sober on Friday. So without Peace, none of that would be possible. None of the good things in my life would have ever happened. Without those counselors and that support and that small community where I can trust every single person around me and know that they would do anything for me and I would do that in return, without that, I could never have grown into the human being I am today. I could never really have surpassed those depths I was in when I was in my use. And for that, I'm forever grateful. It'd break my heart to ever see Peace close, because I just know that'd be that many other people in my position who weren't getting the help they needed.
Okay, Representative Abler, you had a question. Thank you, Mr. Gregor.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're with us. And you can be an example and encourage others too, I think, and that's pretty exciting. I just came from Recovery Day on the Hill and talking to some of those individuals, which is probably the part of the timing of this. But Mr. Chair, just to the fiscal impact here on the bill, I think everybody agrees this is something you wish we could do, that would be more pressure on your budget, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of good ideas that we should do, and this is one of them. We should do this one too, Mr. Chair. anyway, that's my job, is to just help push you on good things. If this comes out of the fund, is there a surplus net fund? And if it's, can we talk about that? And so I understood we swept some money last year to take that surplus down to zero. And so if we did this, would then somebody else not get the services they need? And so maybe somebody can answer that to me and how that would flow through.
Representative Leadwing.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't answer that question. I don't know. I mean, I think I'm carrying the bill so that this can be in the mix. You know, I'm hoping that this committee will have some additional funding that we can, that'll be available. And I think that, you know, when we're taking money out of the consolidated fund to use for other things, I think that we need to be able to also fund the things that should be funded out of that fund. So I hope that having this bill in the mix will allow us to sort of examine the whole issue, and that, you know, we should be putting pressure on our leadership and on the administration to, you know, not give it all back, you know, as some among us would like to do, you know, give it back. No, we have money and we have needs that are really important in the state, and we need to meet them before we give it back, quote unquote.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Abler. I wasn't even going there, Representative Liebling. I was just asking about the impact on the budget. And but since you brought it up, there's a lot of ways to economize and streamline in a budget as large as ours. And when we had our challenge in 2011, we found some of those ways. We've talked about people that are sitting in Bethesda paying, I think it's $2,400 a day, looking to get into Anoka Treatment Center, which is $800 a day. And people are sitting there at $800 a day trying to get into a place that costs $150 a day, but there's no $150 places. And just as one example of a way to find money for this very thing is that those different silos that we have to contend with. But Mr. Chair, and as this goes forward, I hope the fiscal note could show some savings in other parts of the budget. And with regard to Mr. McGregor, success stories like this are ones you want to have more of. And to be crass, funerals are cheap, and then you're done with the expense. But we want to actually invest heavily in you, Mr. McGregor, and others like you to help you be all you can be. And but I would think, Mr. Chair, is we can help these young adults succeed in these, if it's foresights or whatever they are, that the costs that don't go into the correction system and that don't go into the all the other court systems that we pay ourselves could be captured to fund this. This is a pretty small amount of money for our budget, and it seems to me that an aggressive fiscal note could show savings that would let us do this. And so I hope that hope DHS and corrections and those guys are listening to this today out in the Ebo land where they spend time in their fiscal note meetings. But I think you're onto something good, Representative Liebling, and I'd like to help see this happen.
Mr. Berg, did you want to address the money part of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler is remembering correctly that last year with the projected carry forward in the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund, the Omnibus Finance Bill swept all the balances out of that account to the general fund, so that currently that fund shows a zero balance in 14 and 15. The issue in this bill is that it appropriates it directly out of that fund. If this moves forward, the source of the funding would have to be addressed.
Representative Brunegger.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say when I look at this bill, I see it as a need versus a want or a desire, and I appreciate the testimony of the young person that it's been helpful to you. You know, when I was on the school board, one of the things we did is if something was so necessary to add to the overall expenditure, then something has to drop off the bottom. So I'd simply echo Representative Abler's comments that if this, you know, I see this as a need, therefore there's got to be some type of saving someplace else in the HHS budget to fund that need. And we just can't always, and that's what families and businesses do in the private sector. You just can't always just add to the expense. You have to make trade-offs. So I just encourage that. But I like the bill, and I definitely want to help people that are struggling with addictions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a comment that I agree with Representative Grunhagen that this is a need, not a want. This is young people we're talking about here. They are at a crossroads in their life, and it will go one way or the other, as he just represented. I know one personally who is at Peace Academy, and I've heard many stories like this. This is a wonderful program and an important need, and I fully support this.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't think any of us in our room doubt the importance of investing in our young people and their recovery. I think sometimes the worst we do is when we have all these different silos in our world and trying to figure out how to cross them. But given that the Education Committee seems to historically always do better in terms of resources than this particular committee, I hope that the recovery schools are also knocking on the door of the Education Committee, because the Chemical Dependency Fund over the years has cut back over and over and over again who adults who are eligible. And so we're already turning away a lot of people who want to make the same transformation that you've made in your life. And we have to make sure that no matter where addiction grabs you in your life continuum, that the door is open with the kind of support that you need to make the transformation that you've made. And I really think we need to challenge our schools to step up in the education budget to support these, just as they would, you know, high-need special ed students. This is clearly something that is a responsibility, and I'd be glad to talk to people on the Education Committee, and I hope that you'll also join us in knocking on those doors, because I think it's been really tragic how much we have reduced the ability for people who are willing to make a change to actually have the support they need at all ages. So let's all work on all possible doors to make sure they're all open.
Final comments, Representative Leibler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to thank the testifiers for being here today. And very good. I didn't realize it was your first testimony, but great job, both of you. And thanks for sharing your story. It's not always easy to do that in public like this. And very much appreciated. You can see how you've affected the committee members by talking to them so frankly about your situation. And, I just want to kind of, not to beat this too much, but, you know, when we're talking about finding dollars within the HHS budget, you know, one of the things that people have to remember is that our population is growing, and especially our elderly and our disabled population are growing. So it's not everybody wants to say, well, you know, here's our priority and just get rid of something else in the HHS budget. Well, I think that there isn't a lot of something else. I think our budget, you know, people have to realize that we're looking at a whole state budget. And when people want to say, let's cut taxes. Well, that's, from the legislative point of view, cutting taxes is spending. It's often permanent spending that goes on year after year after year. So when people want to say, give it back, that we have some money, instead of meeting the needs, just give it back, I just want you to think about what you're saying there. You're saying, don't meet any additional needs that we might be realizing we have, like the ones we heard here today. Now, we all know on HHS we all try very hard to economize, to find better and cheaper ways to do things, because we know that this budget will consume the whole state if we let it, because the needs are so great. But, Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing this bill, because the one thing I really don't want us to do is pretend we don't have the needs just because we may not be able to meet the needs. It's really important for us to see the need that's there and for Minnesotans to recognize that if they don't want to pay for stuff, what kinds of needs they're leaving unmet. And I agree with whoever said it over here, I think Representative Lane. You know, these are young people. These are people who are going to be contributing to our state for many, many years. And, we owe them the opportunity to do that in a healthy way. So thank you all. And so I would move that this be laid over.
Mr. Representative Newton has a comment.
Very, very briefly, Mr. Chair. This morning in our K-12 Finance Committee with Representative Grunhagen and Representative Crom, we looked at safe schools levy. And, you know, we run into a sort of a murky area here between what is education and what is health care. and it, within the Safe Schools Levy, with the intermediate schools and what you brought up, Representative Quam, with your cooperative, you know, where do we find the correct funding for our students who are in situations like this? And it, there is a murky area. You know, is it, should it be education funding, because it is education, or should it be health and human services funding? So I think perhaps we need possibly to bring it to K-12 to see if there's some way that we can not only take care of this, but also what Representative Quam had mentioned this morning with the cooperative he had. So thank you.
Okay, so House File 2379 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next is House File 2741, Representative Fisher.
First time for everything.
Well, welcome to the committee, although you were here
earlier. We're on the side here. Thank you, Chair Huntley. First of all, for 2741, I'd like to move it for laying over for inclusion as we go forward. And very quickly, I do have, besides Sue Aberdeer Holden, I do have several other testifiers that will also be coming up that we'll introduce in a few moments. But very quickly, want to address why the needs for the bill that we have in front of us is, last year, legislatively, we had to make some difficult decisions with the tight budgets we had. And we did that by taking some funds from the adult mental health grants to help pay for rate increases in the adult mental health rehabilitation services, because there have been so great cuts in the past that a number of the providers were starting to have problems with the low payment rate and were not being able to pay for the activities and being in jeopardy of whether they're going to continue in operations or not. That was a tough decision. Now, however, we have an opportunity with better budget forecasts and outlooks to have an opportunity to restore funding to the adult mental health grants. Traditionally, these funds have paid for a number of different services and support at the county level, including paying for treatment for people who were uninsured. Nearly every year, this grant program has received cuts, particularly because we have not been good at gathering and reporting data, including outcomes. The department, advocates, and county and providers have all agreed that we need to come together and figure out a better way to do this. In the meantime, there's currently a huge logjam in our mental health system. People are waiting to move forward in community housing for more residential or acute health care system, and settings that create a logjam have created a logjam in the emergency room. In every region of the state, there's a need for housing for people with mental health, with mental illnesses. This funding would be used to support a number of different options, including increasing the availability of supportive housing, housing support services, and employing housing support specialists. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Sue, who has a little bit more information, and will introduce our other testifiers.
Mr. Holden, welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Abner Holden, NAMI, Minnesota, with a cold. And I have a couple of handouts as well. As Representative Fisher explained, every year we've seen actually this adult mental health grant get cut, sometimes $10 million, sometimes $13 million. And I realize with block grants, you know, you don't often know where that money goes. And we agree that we need to be better. And we will, during the interim, actually come together and say, how can we collect more data, more outcome data, and really, so we can really tell you how that money is used. But we do have this incredible logjam, and I'm sure you've seen all the stories that have been in numerous papers about, you know, people sitting in the emergency rooms waiting to get into inpatient. We know a lot about people waiting to get into ANOCA. Sometimes the waiting list is 90 or 100 people long. And while there's been discussions about maybe we need more beds, I just want to remind you that people spend a majority of their life living in the community. A very, very tiny percentage of their life is lived in an acute care hospital or in ANOCA. And so if we focus on building up the most expensive part of our system without building up the lowest cost part of our system, we won't get rid of the log jam because we will still have people waiting to get into the community. So what we wanted to do is say, well, the economy is better. We've taken our cuts, you know, during the recession. So now that the economy is better, and I really agree with what Representative Liebling said, then let's look at how to reinvest these dollars. But instead of just putting the money into the block grant, we're going to say this time we're going to put it just for supportive housing. And I think that that will actually go a long way for undoing this log jam. We have people who are at Anoka who are waiting to move into the community. We have people who are in ERTS facilities who are also waiting and sometimes get discharged into homeless shelters. I mean, that's not a good way to stay in recovery for your mental health. So I have three sheets. One actually will show you the, if the page can hand these out, what this will show you is that some data for people who were hospitalized before and after receiving supportive housing services, and this is just from one program. So they went from 74 clients who needed it down to 40. But if you look at the number of bed days, it dramatically reduces from 3,293 acute care bed days down to 630. Now, just kind of do the math, $1,000 a day, and you can see that we have just already saved a lot of money by keeping someone out of the hospital. I also have just the list of who got the supporting housing grants in the past, and you can see we're not anywhere close to meeting the needs. There's very few, you know, in greater Minnesota, there's a couple but not many, and even in the metro area, we know that there are still huge needs. There is a gaps analysis that is done by the department, by the counties, saying, you know, what are our needs in the mental health system? And nearly all 87 of the counties came back and said, our need is for supportive housing. We have to figure out how we can keep people. And I want to make sure that you know that it's not just saying it's in a big segregated building. These are scattered site locations. There are all sorts of different options. It might just be someone at the front desk, you know, who can watch the person as they come and go, make sure that they're doing okay. So it's not even a lot of, you know, heavy-duty services. They can be light services in a way, but can still help people remain in the community. One thing I want to mention, especially in terms of the intent, and we worked with actually Senate Council on this, is we're not, in terms of how would we do this, we're not eliminating the dollars that went to the armed services last session. We're just adding money back into the adult mental health grants only for supportive housing. And so I hope that that's clear. And then I also have for you housing data related to one program at Vail Place that actually shows for their one program how they were able to keep people stable in the community by just having some supportive housing. So I hope that, you know, as you try to figure out where all these dollars go, that you'll consider putting some of this back in so that we can actually fund supportive housing programs, which are not only cost effective, but really have a positive impact on people's lives. And I know we have other testifiers, but I'll stick around.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Abderholden, there was a pretty dramatic series of articles about the closing of a supportive services facility in Ramsey County that, you know, offered day services and community supports for people who are living on their own in their own apartments as opposed to a housing-based, you know, service. And it doesn't look like this is in your list of services, but would you think that's also worthy of and would have some of these same outcomes in terms of stabilizing people?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, Representative Liebling, absolutely. And I think what we want to do, Loeffler, it's my cold, I'm sorry. I need more coffee. What we want to do during the interim is really figure out how we can better tease apart the adult mental health grant so that we're making sure that the things that we know that work, including crisis teams, including community support programs, that those actually are funded and that we collect data and outcomes. So we really do plan on coming back next session to really look at those dollars and make sure that we've got what we need to in terms of moving forward. And you're right, they have... you know, the ones that were able to keep data, were actually able to show some really good outcomes from that.
Thank you.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. And this is more of an editorial, I think, than a question. But, I'm really pleased when I see information about that you're tracking information, that people are tracking outcomes. It's come to my attention that there are some programs for persons with mental illness, and when I said, well, how are your rehospitalization, have you dropped, has the service been able to drop hospitalizations, I was told, well, we don't track that. And so it's kind of heartbreaking as we at this table talk so much about how to lower health care costs and we need to, you know, support, and we want to support programs and changes through medical homes and others that actually lower those rates, and yet in some programs they're not even tracking that. So I just wanted to say this is really helpful to me, and I really appreciate this kind of information that shows there are some things that we can do that actually do make a difference, and it's great that you have the information to prove that. So I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you.
And then we have a couple testifiers. First we'll have Mr. Martin Marty.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Martin Marty. I'm from Hennepin County's Human Services and Public Health Department. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 2741, which restores this critical safety net funding for persons living with severe and persistent mental illness, especially these folks who rely on avoiding bad outcomes like homelessness, the jail, hospital time, and to remain in the community in their own housing. One of the original purposes of the mental health grant, going back all the way to 1995, the Mental Health Initiative, was to really provide some funding that was creative, community-based, that services and support that you could not fund through Medicaid or other funding streams. Part of my job at Hennepin County, I'm the liaison, department liaison to the what's called the Adult Mental Health Local Advisory Council. This is a board-appointed, county board-appointed group of consumers and families, providers and advocates. And this group has been tracking this housing challenge in our community for well over 20 years. It's gotten worse and better at different times. I think we're in one of those times right now where it is definitely worse. Every year this comes up as an unmet need. It is linked to this grant. This council does look at the grant money and try to make some decisions. As Sue Aberholden talked about, it's been cut regularly over the years. Housing is such a key component for people in recovery, people living with severe and persistent mental illness. In Hennepin County, the housing support programs and permanent supportive housing, we spend almost $3 million. Of that, $893,000 is used in a program that houses people. It gives subsidies for transitional rental housing subsidies for clients and consumers, and this is as they wait for permanent housing. I'm doing the math in my head because I'm such a whiz. That's about $18 a day, I think, as opposed to some of the statistics you have in front of you now. The cost of hospitalization, and I just need to point out Hennepin County. It's, you know, because of the new obligations we have to pay for people at AMRTC that are there past 60 days. And when I say AMRTC, I'm just an acronym, Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. My apologies for that. Which is a little over $1,000 a day. We're now obligated to pay 75% of that. It's a little over $750 a day. While Hennepin County does support the ARMS expansion that we've that's related to this bill, the Adult Mental Rehabilitative Mental Health Services, we recognize or believe that ARMS does not meet all the needs of consumers who require more flexible and creative hands-on support to live successfully in the community. Supportive housing providers can provide a range of services with assistance from the funding proposed in House File 2741. Some of those, I'll just list off a few things. Assistance with employment or other meaningful activities, working together with landlords to maintain housing, completing forms and budgets in order to maintain housing, assisting with grocery shopping, attending meetings, assisting consumers to feel part of the larger community, and assisting with transitions and crisis prevention. I didn't mention when someone goes in the hospital, you may be, these housing support providers may actually be feeding the goldfish. That actually happened in, with one of the people I've worked with. You may be dropping off things at a storage shelter, picking up things at a homeless shelter for getting people settled in the community. We in Hennepin County are fortunate to have 7 community support programs that are distributed regionally across Hennepin County. These agencies serve annually 3,000 consumers, of which 500 receive housing support services. We support the piece in this bill that would increase the capacity for housing specialists that work out of those community support programs. We also, Mr. Chair and representatives, feel like this, that kind of funding, which isn't always included in a medical benefits package, is something that supports what this state is trying to adhere to, which is the Olmstead Decree, the federal Olmstead Decree, which really behooves us not to look at every possible resource to keep people with disabilities and certainly people with serious mental illness in the community in the most integrated setting possible. So finally, support of this appropriation will strengthen the community mental health safety net that our own advocates and consumers have identified as critical for recovery for people with mental illness. And I urge you to support this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Marty. Any questions? The Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Mr. Marty. Thanks for coming. I just, the last year, the 75% thing went through, and I thought that was meant to spur you all to a new enthusiasm toward finding community settings to get rid of the liability part. Have you found any enthusiasm on the part of your commissioners to do that, or was this just another way to get money out of you? Is that how it turned out? What did you find?
Mr. Marty.
Simply put, Representative, the latter. however, this is a shared responsibility across the state and the federal government, so we're very much reliant on things like the home and community-based waivers and other funding streams, the health plans and what they provide in some of the special needs basic care programs. In Hennepin County, it has spurred us. I will say this. We have requests for proposals for 2 intensive residential treatment programs in Hennepin County. I think the state has one as well that's out there. But we do need to collaborate closely with the state Department of Human Services Mental Health Division. And we have been doing that. So seriously, we have whether it spurred it, I think most of us in Hennepin County felt that was a little bit, well, shall I say the P word, not punitive, but maybe it was. It's difficult to do without the dollars at actually other levels of government.
Mr. Chair, and just follow up. And so, how many clients or patients, whichever we call them, are you paying the 75% for today? Do you know?
I think it's between probably 15 and 20 right now. The waiting list, as Sue Aberholden had mentioned, can be as for people at local hospitals going in, you see it's backed up, can be as high as 80, 90. I'm not sure of the current waiting list numbers, but my best estimate right now is it's between 15 and 20 that what we're paying for.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Well, I was just doing some quick math here. At 20 people at I don't know, it's millions of dollars a year. It seems like that would, I mean, this bill is only for, several million.
Well, we already, in Hennepin County, we've set aside over $6 million for this cost.
Yeah. Because this is a real problem, Mr. Chair. Whether it be some of these sex offender placements, but in these individuals who are less threatening than that, but still scary to some neighbors, the challenge is where you're going to put these units. And in my city, they were unhappy about a 4 unit for just some people with that were adults with developmental disabilities, And so, and then you look at this chart here, which I find an impressive chart. I hope DHS, Mr. Ripson Fisher, looks at this when they price your fiscal note. So if you create these spots, you're actually going to spend less money. So, I mean, we're sharing your enthusiasm toward helping people move through. And I think what somebody has to figure out is a plan to actually get enough spaces developed that people will accept in their various locales across the state. Because if you're going to spend several million dollars in punitive monies for nothing to keep people bottled up, it, you know, I'm just trying to cheer you on with your work. So, Representative Fisher, you're on a good project here. Good luck.
Appreciate that, Representative.
Then we're going to represent Quam, and then we're going to hear other testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at some of the handouts, not sure where a couple of them are sourced at, but I'm seeing on the one that has sites and per year and units, I was wondering why I see Hennepin County is below the state or this average here for cost per site or per unit, but I did notice like Region 3 is 2.5 times, actually almost 3 times what Hennepin County has, and I'm wondering, is there a different set of supports they're going for the different areas and sites? In other words, there are additional personnel or training, or are these fairly equivalent?
Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Quam, each project is different, so you can't really compare necessarily the costs or how they're doing it. Some of them really just have, it's a person at the front desk. Other have a person who is actually assigned to work with landlords, because if you have that tenancy support, it goes easier. So each one is a little different, so it makes it difficult to, on this little chart, to compare one to another.
Representative
Kwan. Mr. Chair, thank you. One last follow-up on the more graphical and colorful handout. It shows 56% MA, funding source. And I was wondering, we frequently hear MA and other programs only fund, less than break even. And I was wondering if this is also something that is on the underfunded or under reimbursed side.
Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Quam, the Medicaid would be, and that's from People Incorporated, so I think that's their annual report, so that's a little different. but in a lot of these programs, they're not getting Medicaid services inside the housing. If someone had more intensive needs, they might get a CADI waiver, which is Medicaid reimbursement. Maybe someone has an ACT team or an ARMS worker, but some people either need less or a little bit more. So what this funds is not what's Medicaid reimbursable. So it's a totally different set of services.
Okay.
Let's go on to People Inc.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next person I have coming up is Mr. Tim Burkett from People Incorporated, and he has a client coming along with him by the name of Terrence.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tim Burkett, CEO of People Incorporated. We served about 2,300 people last year in crisis residences in Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and Anoka County. And in the old days, those folks would have been served in the hospital. And we did it at 20% of the cost of a hospital. And so thank you for a dozen years ago, actually in the case of Ramsey County, 20 years ago, deciding that crisis residences were a viable option for people in mental health crisis. We also have intensive residential treatment programs in the 7-county area, which are 90 days long. And we've identified as the most critical issue in regard to our services overall, discharge into homelessness. We're discharging these people who have been in our crisis residences for 5 days into homelessness. We never used to do this. When we opened these residences 8 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, in the case of Ramsey County, we were able to discharge these folks into supported housing. But as folks have stated today, because the community block grants have diminished year by year, there's been less and less housing. So folks like Terrence, whom you will hear from shortly, they don't want to leave our crisis residences. They don't want to leave. They don't want to graduate. They're afraid to graduate, not because they don't have their mental health symptoms under control. They've got them under control, but because they know they're going to be without housing, and they're going to end up on the street, in jail, in the hospital, or trying to get back into Diane Ahrens or Nancy Page, which is what they try to do. So I think this bill is wonderful. I support it entirely, and I want to turn things over to Terrence, who's one of our clients, to talk about his situation.
Welcome to the committee.
How you doing? My name is Terrence Lacefield. I'm 53 years old. I want to ask you all right now just to bear with me for a minute, because I just found out yesterday I got a cataract removed off my left eye, so bear with me, please. Okay. I'm currently suffering from a bipolar disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and alcoholism. I'm currently on three different psychiatric medications. I have been seeing a therapist and a psychiatrist at People Incorporated Start Clinic for several months before coming to People Incorporated HUS Center for Recovery. HUS is an inpatient treatment program for people like me that have mental illness and addiction. I've been homeless on and off for the past year, been living in shelters, unable to find housing, no money, and no places to be found, and I have legal issues. I am currently at People Incorporated HUS Center for Recovery. I have been there since January the 14th. When I am done at HUS, I have no place to go. It will be difficult to stay focused on my mental health needs as well as stay sober if I have no place to live. The shelters are not helpful to me because I don't feel safe. They are crime infested and polluted with drugs. I want to continue addressing my bipolar disorder and my PTSD disorder while maintaining sobriety. I want to be in a safe house with other people that support me. I have a therapist, a psychiatrist that I want to continue to see. I want to attend AA and NA, and I already have a sponsor. I know a lot of people that don't have housing. 95% of the people in HUS have no housing. I've had friends that left HUS and returned to the streets that have gone off their psychiatric medications and are back to using alcohol and drugs. I am afraid for myself. Once I complete HUS treatment, I know I caught a break being sent to HUS, and I want to do all I can to maintain a lifestyle of recovery. Housing for people like me is very important. Thank you for hearing my story.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Don't see any, so thank you very much. Are there more testifiers?
Nope, that will be it today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then I'll move that the bill be laid over if possible. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And next up, we're going to have House File 2655, which is the chair's bill. So welcome to the other side of the table, Representative Huntley. And if you would introduce and move your bill, please, and then I think we're going to have Mr. Berg walk through the details for us.
I would move House File 2655 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Ways and Means. And what this is a sort of a technical correction bill. There was some changes in funding. There's no net change, and Mr. Berg can give you more details.
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Doug Berg, the finance analyst for this committee. Representative Huntley's right, this is a Department of Human Services Corrections Bill. It makes two changes to Chapter 108, last year's omnibus finance bill. It does have no net change in state expenditure up or down. If members want to look at the, there are really two changes. The first one starts on page 3 of the bill, on line 3.34. And you'll see on that line and the two lines on the top of page 4, it changes the number in the rider for the Adoption Assistance and Relative Custody Program. If you look two lines above that, you see there's no change in the actual appropriation. What is happening here is in the final bill, we picked up some old language I think was part of the governor's original proposal. The dollar amounts are correct, but the rider that allocates them between those programs did not have the correct language. This allows DHS to allocate them the way they were intended on the spreadsheet so that none of the programs run short of money. And I will say the reason this bill is moving now is because they allocate these funds on a quarterly basis. The fourth quarter of fiscal 14 allocations will happen in April, and so they need to have this bill passed so that neither of these programs, North Star or relative adoption assistance, relative custody care, run short of the appropriate amount of funds in fiscal 14. The second change it makes begins on page 6. If members will remember, there was a $200,000 grant for the high-risk adults program. Actually, that was Representative Huntley, I believe, carried the legislation on this. This is a program that works to help individuals who've been in prison get out into the and succeed once they get out. We allocated $200,000 to that. Again, the money was counted in the right areas of the bill, but the rider was put in the wrong section. And it should be under the, where you see it on page 6, which is the section on child and economic support grants. It puts it in there, and then on page 8 of the bill, excuse me, 9 of the bill, it deletes that same rider from the adult mental health grant section of the bill where it was not supposed to be. So again, it does not change the actual funding at all. It just ensures that the funding is taken out of the place where we counted it. And Madam Chair, that's the whole bill.
And I would also like to note, members, that it's retroactive. We do change the effective date retroactive till July 1st so that these quarterly changes can be made. So this is a technical bill, and I want to clarify that what we're going to ask after any questions are answered is that this be re-referred to Ways and Means, and there'll be a vote on that. I just want to clarify that language. So are there any questions? Representative Sirwas.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You look great with a gavel, if I'm to say so myself.
Very sweet. Maybe I'll have one next year, Representative.
Hey, hey, come on now. It wouldn't be a good finance meeting if I didn't ask you a question about the network for better futures. So, question for you, Representative Huntley, why is the appropriation being switched from the adult mental health care to the children? If I remember the program right, it's adult offenders doing community reintegration. So that confused me.
Chair, Representative Zerwas. Where it is going into the child and economic support grants. You'll see the header for that is on line 5.1. That's the section it's into. That's where DHS wanted it coded in the budget last year. And importantly, the reason we're making this change is that's where we actually put the money. So if you look at the lines on line 5.1 of the bill, those numbers include the $200,000 for this grant. We, however, put the rider in the adult mental health section. So if we left it this way, what would happen is the adult mental health program would end up paying $200,000 more than we appropriated, shorting something else, and child and economic support grants would have $200,000 which they could not spend.
Follow up.
Representative Sirwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Finley, just to clarify, the program itself and the services that they're providing aren't changing. It's just changing because of where the money was first allocated with the budget?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, that's exactly right.
Thank you, Representative West. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if you'd like to switch parties, you could have a gavel next session.
Ouch.
Oh, no, he did.
Representative Quam, thank you for the distraction.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering, is there any effort to get an app or do some improvement to the processes so that we don't have, you've got billions and billions, and some people might say, well, being off, this number's a million off, this is a couple hundred thousand off there, but we ought to be detailed enough to where I'd correct the statement that was from the testifier, it's not what you voted for. Well, actually, we did vote for it. We shouldn't have. It should have been correct and accurate. And I would like, some indication we're going to improve the processes so that we actually have the correct numbers when we vote. Because, that due diligence and fiduciary responsibility is not trivial to some of us.
Thank you, Representative Quam, and I think the point is we think we voted, we are placing the money where we said we were placing it last year and where you thought you were placing it, it just, the language did not match up with that. And Mr. Berg, if you have a better way of saying that, I'm open to it.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, that's essentially right. The spreadsheet you looked at last year was correct. It showed the money where we put it and where we intended it to be, where the agency thought it should be coded. These two mistakes both represent human error in putting the bill together. I can say we strive at a staff level and the agency level. We strive very hard to avoid mistakes, but they do happen.
Thank you, Mr. Bergen. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a person who held the gavel for 2 years and had a slog through this very kind of bill, it's really hard. And things happen so quick. And I someday feel the privilege of having a gavel, which would be interesting and I think a good thing. You will discover that whatever committee you're running, from the smallest subcommittee to the biggest finance committee, stuff happens, and there's, if they ever quit having a legislative, like a fixed bill, I don't know, you'd probably be in heaven. That's the only place they probably don't need them there, so.
Thank you. Representative Huntley renews his motion that House File 2655 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill will go on. If anybody have any further comment? If not, we're looking at our clocks. The meeting's adjourned.